Hello and welcome to the House Einstein podcast. I'm your host, Osman, with House Einstein, and with me is Hamish.
Hello, hello. I'm the producer for the podcast, and I help House Einstein run smoothly, get out social media content, and also help with contract showings and listings, which we'll talk about a little bit later on today.
And if this is your first time joining the podcast, I am a realtor here in Boulder, Colorado, and I'm the founder of House Einstein, a little brokerage, a boutique brokerage. We focus on business in Denver, Boulder, all the way up to Fort Collins. We also cover the mountain towns and some of the resort markets, including Breckenridge, Frisco, and Winter Park. And House Einstein has been around since 2013. And prior to that, I was with another company I founded in 2007. That's also still a brokerage here in Boulder. And the goal of this podcast, why you're hopefully here, is to enjoy the entertainment value, because the mission of the brokerage is to help you make a smarter real estate decision. And a lot of what we talk about here on this podcast also is intended in that vein, but has to be delivered with the giant disclaimer that all of this is entertainment. And if you are a client of House Einstein, the best thing to do when you have a real estate situation pop up is to reach out and call us. You can find us at houseeinstein.com if you're not a client of the firm. And that's the best way to become a client, is to reach out to us after checking out our website, and you'll see the list of agents in the company. You certainly can contact me directly as well. I do help buyers and sellers myself. I don't just record podcasts for fun.
No. We walk the walk as well. So, good stuff. Well, we are in, I wouldn't call it a time crunch, but this is going to be a slightly shorter pod than the usual today. I think we should jump right into it, and we'll address why also a little bit later on in the pod.
Okay. We'll set that intention. I don't know if we'll actually end up shorter, but we will set that intention.
Fingers crossed.
We're going to be talking about market conditions. We're going to be talking about some activity with House Einstein that has caused this podcast potentially to be shortened. We'll also discuss the sale of the week, and we will touch on some real estate news that I think is worth talking about. And then as a feature, we always have a little tidbit called Tell Me Something I Don't Know. And that hopefully is sharing some information about the real estate business, particularly here in Colorado, that you might not know unless you're in the real estate business and have been for some time. Most new agents probably would not know that unless they took this year's commission update.
It's a curious one. Yeah, it's come up occasionally as more of a fun fact to my friends than something I think we've had to practice. So yeah. Excited to get to it.
Yeah, well, the example in the commission update was so bizarre that I feel like I really want to know
all of the examples on that.
Well, that one in particular. Well, all right. Well, let's jump into it, and hopefully that's enough to give you a sense of what we'll be talking about today. And that way you can skip ahead if you'd like. And you'll also see all of those descriptions in the show notes for what the topics are and also how to reach us.
Absolutely. Well, take it away, Oz.
Okay, let's talk about market conditions, because March data was just unveiled, and it's still preliminary data, meaning that some realtors are slow to update the MLS, but it's now preliminary, and it's going to move in a conservative direction, meaning that likely things like sales volume will increase, not decrease, with a day or two more. So we might as well get into it. And I'll add that, and hopefully that makes sense to you. Does that make sense to you, Hamish, when I said that?
Sales volume will increase, not decrease.
How that's conservative as a analysis. Does that make sense to you?
No. So
okay, good.
You might have to elaborate.
I'm glad you said that.
Sometimes it's counterintuitive.
I explain things very well. So let's say there were 100 sales last month in any market. Let's just say it's Boulder County, even though we know that number's not right. Mm-hmm. And it's now March 6th, and the realtors have inputted their data, and the MLS says there's 100. Well, likely that number is going to move up, not down.
Gotcha.
Because new agents are going to add to the data. So when we say there was 100 sales in March, in February, today is March 6th, when we say that there were 100 sales in February, there's a chance there's going to be 102 or 103, because the odds of somebody inputting a sale and then pulling it back out are not that likely, but the odds of them being stragglers because they're off spending their commission dollars, you know, at the casino, that's much higher than... So likely it'll move higher, not lower, in most of these data points. So, and the other piece I wanted to add is that we're only going to discuss Boulder County single-family houses. And it's important to understand that other markets are not the same. And even within Boulder County, you will see a dramatic difference between Lafayette, Louisville, the city of Boulder, Lyons. All of them are their own little micro market. And then within those micro markets, there's also market conditions that sometimes vary right down to the street level. So property type, price range, and condition will dictate much more than broad market statistics, but you have to at least know the broad market statistics. Yeah. And I think it's important to share them with people today. Well, so,
yeah.
Okay. Without further ado, let's get into it. Hamish really wants to keep this under an hour. Okay. Single family sales volume in Boulder County in February, up 67% year over year. Keep in mind that February is not a high volume month, so it's relatively easy for the market to have large percentage increases, but that's a big one, 67% increase. Inventory in February was up 21%, pending sales were up 23%, and new listings hitting the market, brand new listings up 27%. Now keep in mind, brand new means there are occasionally, especially this time of year, refresh listings that sneak under the radar. Sometimes the MLS does not accurately reflect what's new and what's a refresh listing. They're getting better and they're getting smarter, but I don't think our MLS is AI powered yet. And so it's just matching up databases, data fields. And if there's a slight difference, sometimes you'll see stale listings show up as new listings. So, which is why it's, by the way, it's really important before you write an offer to make sure that you understand whether this is truly a new listing or is this listing been on the market all of last year, overpriced, sitting there. And so when you are sitting in the war room with your agent, hopefully a House Einstein agent, but let's say you're sitting in the war room, right, thinking about the negotiation strategy you're going to pursue with your agent, not the house, well, whether you're a House Einstein agent or not, you should be asking about the full listing history of that property. And the best way to do that is to actually put in the address and do a manual search, maybe do a neighborhood manual search and look for expired listings. It's very easy to miss that little data point.
Yeah. You want the full story before you're going in, you know, pricing wise, timing wise, everything like that. You want as much information as you can.
Right. Yeah. Before you write your offer, you should know how long have they owned it? What was their purchase price? What's their likely equity position? You can see the recorded mortgages. Has it been on the market before? What improvements did they make? And you should, of course, know what else has been going on that street and in that neighborhood before you actually pen that offer.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what does that mean? More sales, more inventory, more pendings, more listings?
More.
I think it means, you know, overall the market's waking up. And I like to see a couple of months of activity before I really say that's a trend. But early indications with February data are that the market's looking quite a bit stronger than last year. But buyers still have more selection. So if you're sitting on the sidelines, you might want to think about getting into it, at least starting to understand market conditions and what is a good home for you and what you might get for your money. And if you're thinking about selling, I mean, our clients reach out to us a year or more in advance. And we start to talk about what the value of their home might be. We start to send them comps. We start to discuss it so they can get a sense of where they might end up when the deal finally closes and they get a check from the title company. They kind of want to know, are we looking at, you know, $1 million of upside? Are we looking at being upside down? I mean, very few of our clients are ever upside down, but it's possible, especially if they bought in March of 2022.
Oh, yeah.
But that's what you should be doing with your clients. And the March data, sorry, that's what you should be doing as a client or with your clients before you make a decision on buying or selling a home. And Boulder County is showing signs of a market waking up.
Yeah, absolutely. Another note here in the, yeah.
I was going to say, yeah, let me contrast that with the Denver. So there's an article in, I can't remember, it might have been the Denverite this week, and it was Denver realtors declare buyer's market for condos. Great. It's only been a year of highly elevated inventory of condos in Boulder before the Denver realtors finally want word to get out there to buyers that you can negotiate. You can offer low. You have tons of selection for Denver condos, not necessarily for Denver houses, not in all price ranges and locations, but the realtors finally got around to declaring.
I like the implication. There's a cabal of realtors, and they make the declarations on behalf of all realtors.
That's right.
Yeah.
I like it.
They reached out to you, right?
Right, of course. They said, would you like to join the cabal, Osmond? And I said, hey, man, I think that sounds cool. What do I have to do to join it? And they said, I have to sacrifice my firstborn.
Oh,
and I said, well, I don't know if I want to do that. Not sure.
I thought they said, you're already in. We don't care if you want to come in.
You're already in. You're in the cabal. Whether you like it or not.
That's right.
All right. I think that's sort of a nice teaser for market conditions. But if you are a client and you want to know what's going on in your neighborhood, you're thinking about selling this year or next year, or you're thinking about relocating here and buying, just contact us. I mean, that's our job. It takes 15 minutes. We'll do it live on a video call so you can see what we're seeing. And you'll get accurate information about what's happening in your specific real estate situation.
Absolutely. Well, I think segue is over pretty well. Osmond saying the Boulder market as a whole appears to be waking up. You know, not saying that 100% before the facts are in, but I can at least account for one new piece of inventory that will be making it onto the market. In fact, before this podcast reaches or becomes published, if we're on schedule.
So by the time you know, I think we should be live tomorrow, Hamish.
Yeah, I think we will be.
And so by the time you hear this podcast, this should be an active listing. But even if this was a live studio broadcast to the world, we plan to go live tomorrow. So once you start marketing a home here in Colorado as a licensed real estate professional, you have 24 hours to get it on the MLS. Otherwise, it's a violation. I don't know what they do to you.
Talking about it publicly, probably, that is.
Yeah, marketing it publicly, which this is what we're doing. So we have actually one of three – we have three new listings coming on, all of which should hit the market this month. It's possible one will be the first week of April, but I think all three will hit this month. And we can officially declare one, the first one with the address and the details. So go ahead, Hamish. Tell us about it.
Well, I've been at this house probably four times in the past 4 days. it's 817 Racket Lane in Boulder. It's I'd almost call it like Lower Arapaho Ridge, Lower East, Southeast.
It's just maybe east of Arapaho Ridge.
Yeah.
It's in a, I don't know if I would... Yeah, go ahead.
Sure. Yeah, it's in a super tiny, quiet neighborhood. We've met with the sellers prior to getting all the videography and marketing together, and one of the things that they just couldn't stop talking about was the friendliness of the neighbors, which is pretty sweet. The few times that I've been, you know, shooting video or photography for that, they've stopped by and said hello. Or, you know, if I'm out there with a drone, we're so prepared for people to come and be mad, and everybody was more curious and just excited to see it. So I've been working on that. We're getting twilight photos now, putting together a listing video. We wrote the script. Got a bunch of listing photos together, have it all drafted up, and I'm really excited to bring it to market. I know I'm talking mostly about the marketing material itself and less about the home. I think Osmond might word it a little bit better, but I will chime in with anything that I think is also quite a cool feat.
Well, all of that's super useful, Hamish. Your perspective is different than mine, and my perspective starts with helping these clients buy this house. And we had looked for quite a while. And we actually sold their other property. So we helped them. This is deal one, two, three. This is deal four for these clients. And they're lovely people. They're scientists. And the home checked so many boxes for their family needs. It's in a quieter part of town. It's a newer home past the 1970s where lead-based paint was an issue. It doesn't have a giant yard that they have to maintain. The exterior landscaping is part of the common areas, and it's a super friendly, safe neighborhood, but they could hop on a bicycle, which they are very much bicycle commuter people, and get to see you within 10 minutes, 15 minutes. I mean, it's so easy to get around Boulder in general, but this part of town is just very nice, very affordable relative to other parts of town. It's a lot of house. It's a functional home with most of the bedrooms on the upper level. It's not a giant house, but the basement features a basically an au pair apartment. It has a space for a living area. It's got a bedroom. It's got a kitchen prep area. It's got laundry down there. Of course, a full bath. And all of that makes it really livable for family visiting or an au pair. Oh, and a previous owner put in a private entrance to that basement, of course, with a permit. And that makes it even more livable. You can access that from the garage or the, I think, is there stairs to the outside? Mm-mm. No, but you can go through the garage and go directly down into the apartment without having to be in the main part of the house, which is, excuse me.
You're
there
good.
Is a side entrance to the garage that then goes down into those steps. So all of these fantastic features. One of the nicest things about relisting a home that we helped a buyer purchase is that if it's a home that I liked when we bought it, I mean, at first I don't want – almost all of my conversations with potential sellers begin with, are you sure you really want to sell your Boulder home? Like, this is an amazing asset. We're in one of the safest markets in the country. But when I helped them buy it and we went through that buy process, I know this is a great house. So I'm super excited to bring it to market. They decided that's what they want to do. It also has solar panels that are Tesla solar panels, one of two Tesla roofs. The other one does not have the roof. It just has the panel. This one has the panels, not the roof.
Right.
The other one has a full-on Tesla roof.
The other listing.
Both of them have heat pumps. Right? And this heat pump is huge in this house. They did not take out the furnace, so it still is there, but they don't need it anymore. A future owner could potentially decommission the furnace entirely, but heat pumps, heat and cool, are incredibly energy efficient. They're expensive to put in, so all of these things with a very functional floor plan... It's just a great listing, so I'm mm-hmm. super excited to bring 817 Racket Lane to market.
Yeah. If you do find yourself going to check it out, the hardwood floors are super cool. There's some really neat details within them, and I don't necessarily know how much this is marketed, but the windows and doors in that house all operated so nicely when I was when I was taking all the videos and stuff. Like, everything was works. Smooth,
So earlier this week, I went with one of our contractors to check out a flip. I won't mention the address because this is an active listing. It's not very far from this house, and it's like lipstick on a pig compared to how nice this house is. Yes, the flip has the color scheme, and it looks very hip, and it's got light fixtures that are brand new, and it just looks like...
It's got that contemporary flair.
Yeah, a little more modern feeling. But it's all, like, poorly executed. There's so many signs of lack of attention to detail. Mm. And that's what you get with a flip, is somebody who's profit-minded. This home, all of the improvements were put in by people that cared about the house. And that inlaid wood floor with the patterns inside, that somebody put a lot of time, attention, and love into this home. And I know our current owners also put tons of time and attention. You know, you don't invest in these giant... and very expensive heat pumps if you weren't planning to just stay in the home for a long time, and they care about energy consumption, and this home now has such a light energy footprint.
That's right. And I mean, we could go on. There's, as far as selling points, like, we do these little feature signs. They're a laminated, you know, cardstock with just little bonuses for the buyers to check out when they're coming through the house. And I think I had 25 maybe that I put together, and that wasn't even like the half of it. So we could list off 1,000 times, but it's a really cool house, and I'm so stoked that we were putting it together and bringing it to market.
You can be on the Bobo Link Trail in less than 5 minutes. You can be at the East Boulder Rec Center in probably 7.5 minutes on a bicycle, depending on your speed, of course. It probably would take me to closer to 10, but Boulderites could probably do it in 5. Most Boulderites.
No,
I'm not
in Boulder.
Exactly the fastest cycle. Yeah, but it's like, out of the major shopping plaza that keeps getting better is at Foothills and Baseline. So you've got Busaba, you've got the Gondolier, you've got McDevitt's with their amazing margs,
mm-hmm.
and you've got a functional grocery store. I mean, maybe it's not as exciting as King Supers, or, you know, it's on par.
It's a Safeway, isn't it?
It's a Safeway, but it's a nicer Safeway. It's just not, you know, it's not the fancy Whole Foods, but they have the same stuff. So Bezos? Why are you paying Bezos? All right, let's move on. I think we covered Racket Lane. You should see our new video and listing by the time you hear this podcast.
That's right. And the link will be in the description as well if you'd like to check it out personally.
That's right.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the sale of the week.
That's right.
The address is 3777 Wonderland Hill Avenue, and we'll provide a link to that as well in the show notes. You can also, if that link is dead, you can also find it on Zillow or wherever. But this home just sold. Let me pull it up on the MLS. And it was listed on January 17th. It went under contract within a week. I mean, it was changed, status changed at 7 days. So that's likely right after the first weekend there was an offer. You're not required to change the MLS status for 3 business days. But likely it happened right after the first weekend or during the first weekend. And then after it, after another 7 days, which is probably when it went through the inspection period, it switched from active backup to pending. And you switch it to pending when you want to turn off the showings. Active backup and pending both mean pending. But one means you're looking for backup offers. Pending means you're not. And you should stop showing it. And then 43 days in, it closed. So it just closed on February 29th on Leap Day. Is it called Leap Day, Hamish?
For these purposes, yes.
Okay. All right. Let's call it Leap Day. So the home was listed at 2.295,000. You know what's interesting is it says 3 days on market when I flip screens, and it says 7 days on market when I'm on the primary screen, but okay. 3 days on market. It was under contract right away, within the first week at least, and it sold for 2.5, so 205,000 over list, and there were no additional disclosed concessions. Oh, nope, wait, strike that. There was a $2,800 concession for something or other that the seller paid. Yeah, I mean, not bad. $2,800 when you're getting 200,000 over list. I think that's a good deal. It says closing costs paid by seller. You usually write that when you don't want to write the word inspection concession because you don't want the lender to know. That would be my guess. I mean, why would the seller need to pay $2,800 in closing costs? But okay.
Sure.
A conventional fixed rate mortgage. And, of course, realtors from 2 different offices. Normal 2.8 commission deal. And so let's talk about the location. Why did this property get a bidding war for $205,000 over list? What are your guesses, Hamish? Let me hear what
you kind of gave it away. You said location, right? I'm not.
What's so great about this location? Do you know this neighborhood?
I'm not entirely familiar with the Wonderland Hill Ave address. So I'm now scoping Google Maps, okay. And I can make guesses, but
all right. Well, I won't put you on the spot. So here's the deal: the Hamish has not lived in the city of Boulder for the decades that I have.
No.
So it's a little unfair asking Hamish to justify.
I'd give it a good guess.
A big deal. Well, so Wonderland Lake Open Space is one of the most popular open space areas in the city of Boulder. Mm. You don't often see a lot of tourists on it, like Sanitas, for example, and it's full of kind of rolling footpaths. There's a path around the lake itself, and it leads to dirt that then goes up into the foothills themselves. There's 2 or 3 trails that then go even further west. In fact, I was just running on Wonderland Lake Open Space right from our office, Hamish. My Instagram
yesterday.
I know, early this morning. Yesterday, but the Instagram went out this morning. Shows me
at
running
six.
On these. Yeah, So the 6 a.m. Shows me running on these pads directly north of here. So that's the big draw. But the thing about Wonderland Hill Ave itself is it's actually a relatively busy street. I don't know if it has a yellow line or not. That's my usual rule is if it has a yellow line, you know it's a busy street. If it doesn't have a yellow line, well, you don't know what you don't know. I wouldn't declare it's a quiet street if it's lacking the yellow line.
Yeah, no yellow line.
Yeah, I'm looking at it too. There's no yellow line, but I can tell you that Wonderland Hill Ave is not like a neighborhood. It's a neighborhood arterial. It's also a popular cycling route because people come up on 4th Street and then zigzag over onto Wonderland Hill Ave. I've done that many, many times. This is how you avoid Broadway. So it's, you know, you're probably going to see a car every minute or two during prime time. So it's not like you're on a tiny, quiet little side street. You're mm-hmm. going to get some traffic. But the big selling piece was that the home has a path directly behind it. And it's very, very easy to access Wonderland Hill open space, although I personally would prefer not to have the path behind. But with the exception that you get this sense of space. So when you look out the back windows of the house, you're going to feel a lot more space than if there was another home right back there. That is one thing about backing to open space that people really like. And then the other selling point of the house, Hamish, what do you think?
For me? Well, are you saying for me or what?
No, not for you personally. Okay. I mean, why would a buyer pay $205,000 over list for this house?
Oh, I don't... I have interesting things about the marketing. I don't know. I didn't put too much on that.
Okay, all yeah. right. I like putting you on the spot. All right. Well, look at the photos, Hamish. It is turnkey.
Yeah.
It is okay, really okay. lovely inside. Everything is painted. I mean, it's a little heavy on the gray and white. Like, that's a very popular color scheme from 7 years ago. It was going hardcore, but it's still updated. Every photo shows updated fixtures and finishes. It's what people in the business call turnkey.
Mm-hmm.
And even though the home was built in 71 and the yeah. architecture reflects 1971, all the rooms of the house are ready to go. The professional landscaping is really nice in the house itself, but people usually don't pay a massive premium for professional landscaping. But when the inside is ready for them to move in, they will pay
mm-hmm.
quite a significant premium. And the listing agents know... inexperienced, didn't price it right agent, she priced it right. Somebody really wanted it, and there may have been more than one offer. We don't have the inside details of what happened. And people looked at their alternatives all the way up to 2.5 and said, you know, I need this house. I need to move in. And I'm willing to pay more than list, even though they had a mortgage. It wasn't cash. And the home itself also features five bedrooms. Four on the upper level, one in the basement, that conventional floor plan that the vast majority of buyers favor. It has a two-car attached garage, which most people that spend $2.5 million are going to kind of want their car in the garage.
Yep.
Although mostly these garages end up being gear lockers in Boulder, by the way.
Yeah.
Bicycle storage rooms. And skis and camping and toy rooms. It also is on a big lot. So it's on a 10,600 square foot lot, which is significantly larger than most lots in the city of Boulder. So and of course, the location is west of Broadway and Wonderland Lake and all of that rest of that stuff. So, you know, it's a pretty nice sale for the listing agent and for the sellers themselves, because they only paid 1.2 for the house, 1,225,000 in 2017.
Yeah.
And if you go back and look at those photos from 2017, and I think, can we provide a link to the old photos in the show notes? I think we can.
If you can provide it to me, I can provide it to the people.
I will email it to you, Hamish, deal. And then you can provide it to the people. We'll do that. We'll just do that live right now because it takes no time.
Easy.
So we'll put links to both the old and the new. Look at the old photos, and you can really see what they invested in. After buying the house, they basically every room was touched. Every aspect of the interior, the kitchens and baths. They got rid of things that just looked really dated.
Mm-hmm.
Some rooms they just painted because they didn't want to strip out the wood paneling. They probably, I don't know if they replaced windows or not. That's really hard to tell. These windows, we'd have to look really carefully to see if the handles are exactly the same, Hamish.
That is something I wanted to bring up, though, is although it's like early 70s construction and architecture, I love the windows throughout it. I mean, it's a great use of getting light in the house.
Yeah. Well, I don't see a transom window in any of the photos of the old listing, but I see that in the new listing. So I think they probably did a window package.
Mm.
But the point I'm trying to make is that I'm pausing to go look at the old versus new windows. I think they did new windows.
Yeah.
Okay. So my guess is that they spent somewhere in the neighborhood of $250,000 updating this home. From 2017 to 2024, so over a 7-year time period. But even if they spent, add another 100, they spent 350 updating this home. They also got to enjoy that for the 5 years they had the house. And then they, you know, with a purchase price of 1.2, if they spent 300, they're at 1.5. well, there's still a million over that on the sale price. So not bad for living in Boulder, getting $1 million and living in a nicely updated home.
Not bad at all.
I think that's a nice win for the owners, and of course a nice win for the listing agent who also represented the sellers when they bought the house in 2017.
Now, potentially divisive, but I personally prefer the natural color brick prior to it being bleached. just a personal preference when comparing the two listings. And also looking here on Street View, looking back in time, they didn't just paint it or give it its facelift for the listing. It was painted almost right after they took occupancy, it looks like, or possession.
Oh, based on like the Google map photo?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the smart move, is you buy the house and you spend the first 6 months with contractors tearing it apart and updating it, because living in a home that's under construction sucks.
Mm-hmm.
That's no fun. And they ended up selling it at $800 a square, which, I mean, I could see the argument with the buy side. $810 a square foot. It's a small home. But it has adequate numbers of bedrooms and baths. It has that two-car garage. And most importantly, you know, it's backing to the open space trails with a big lot.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, for $810 a square foot, I can get my head around it. It doesn't feel like an egregious burning of cash. I think they did a good job. Even paying 2.5, I don't think they overpaid. And in fact, I think the right answer is to pay more for the right house in the right location than try to get a really good discount on the wrong house that's been overpriced. In this case, I think the listing agent priced it right. And they still got value even at $200,000 over list because of this
good
location.
House.
I think I've said
good location. Good
I think
house.
I think I've said 300 over list a couple times. It's 200 over list. And I think it makes sense, right? And given that the odds of an equivalent house hitting the market in Wonderland Hill are about zero.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the other thing we do with our buyers, is we will go through and look, okay, what else sold in the last 12 months that you might have bought that fit your needs, that are within your budget, that have this location? And the odds of this kind of thing popping up again, well, having popped up in the last 12 months, maybe one.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Very slim. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Props to the buyer for jumping on it when they did.
I think it's okay. I mean, I hope they feel good about it. I don't think that they're suckers that grossly overpaid for a dog pile. I think they a dump, as they say, or whatever you want to say is a derogatory term. I don't think that's worth paying more for the right house. It's not worth negotiating an amazing deal on the wrong house, because you still got the wrong house.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'd like to bring up a theory that I'm working on. Perhaps not a theory, but a theme I'm noticing. We have the Pantone color of the year, which is peach fuzz. I'd like to introduce the plant of the year, perhaps the plant of the half decade, the fig tree. There are three in this house. And it, like, almost every high-end house that I see now has to have a fig tree. It's just like part of what people want.
A fig tree, like, yeah. Outside?
No, let me find a picture number for you. They've got a really big one and then two little potted ones. Okay, it's like it's one of the bedrooms, primary bedroom suite.
Yep, 21. That's a fig tree? That's what that
yeah.
is?
Yeah, and there was one house that we went and checked out in Newlands last year that had this gorgeous one, like, massive, and I wanted it so bad, but... Yeah, fig trees. They're the next hot thing, I think, or currently are the hot thing, but just nobody brings them up.
For the house husbands and housewives that have everything, clearly a fig tree.
Yeah, gotta have it.
For the Boulder house husbands and housewives that have everything, the cool item is a fig tree. You heard it here first.
That's my call. And then another note is, I don't necessarily know, considering that they had they purchased the home in 2017. I think they were on their stuff and they planned for this sale this year, or they planned for this listing, considering there's pictures of the summer, there's pictures during winter, and they're all professional at the same time. Which is, it's nice to see. It shows a lot of intention and forethought before bringing the home to list. It's not a rush job, and they kind of knew what they were doing going ahead.
Yep. I mean, sometimes we use the seller photos because they took some good photos, but they're never, don't take this personally, sellers, but they're almost never as good as pro photos.
No. Unless you have
so if you're,
equipment, yeah.
Well, and skill. It's not just having the oven good to point. Bake the cake. You got to know how to make the cake. Like, having the high-end oven doesn't make the cake.
No, good point.
But it helps to have a high-end oven or a high-end camera setup. But it also helps to know that photos on the MLS are 4x5, mm-hmm. not 16x19. It also helps all sorts of stuff helps to know when it comes to real estate photography. Anyway, long story short, if you are thinking about selling, talk to your agent early, because that way they can get summer photos of the amazing landscaping. And this landscaping is pretty nice.
Mm-hmm. And it, I mean, it just shows so, it's so lush and beautiful. And I mean, I look out my window and it's a little bit sad. So the sun is shining and we're getting our full springs, but the green isn't out yet, and it's great to see.
That's right. Yeah. None of our, I mean, neither, none of the three listings that were coming to market with, we knew about until late last fall,
mm-hmm.
the ones that are coming to market this month. And if we had known that they were coming to market, we would have told them last summer to do some landscaping cleanup. Let's get some photos in place. Because they have nice landscaping and they'll look great in the summer.
Yeah, especially Racquet Lane, actually. That whole backyard, you could check out some of the older listing photos. It's really pretty and it's going to fill out really nicely.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, Hamish, you wanted to end this early and now we are into this for about 35 minutes or so. So let's keep going.
Yeah, we're killing it.
And move on. So that was sale of the week.
Yep. So.
And now we're talking about what's in the news.
Yes.
Our first article is about mountain lions. And this was published on March 1st in the Colorado Sun. If you're not a subscriber or a supporter of the Sun, I strongly encourage you to do so. It's very well written. And it also covers the region. It doesn't just cover Denver or Boulder. And it's not owned by a private equity firm. Well, actually, I don't know that for a fact, but I don't think it's owned by a private equity firm. I think it was founded by some people that left the Denver Post. This is based on memory from quite a few years ago, but they created this alternative, and it's really a nicely written news source. Mm. What do we call? They're not newspapers. What do we call these things anymore?
It's not a tabloid.
No, it's not the New York Post. And basically, the article says, so the title is "Mountain Lions and Humans Are Interacting More Than Ever on the Front Range. A New Management Plan Is Coming." And it goes into a lot of detail on some of the interactions and some of what Colorado Parks and Wildlife are talking about. And, you know, it's one of the – I brought this article up because it actually – when I first moved here, it was sort of a joke, like, oh, mountain lions are so scary.
Mm.
And I'll never forget my mom visiting and chastising me for hiking because she's – and she said, you'll be food for the mountain lions if you're not careful. The reality is mountain lion and human interactions are really, really rare, but they do happen.
Mm-hmm.
There was a case of a VC, I think he was Israeli, who was hiking on Sanitas, and his toddler got attacked by a mountain lion, and he fended off the attack. The kid was fine.
Oh, I think I heard about that.
I personally have seen a mountain lion up here where I live in 4 Mile, which is about 20 minutes, 15 to 20 minutes from downtown Boulder. It's just up. It's sort of halfway to Ned. And people report mountain lion predation of their pets, their cats and dogs, frequently. So mountain lions are a real thing up here. But for the most part, they leave adult-sized humans alone. But given that they're becoming more and more popular, I thought it made sense to talk about
their existence.
Some of the changes. Yeah, some of the changes that are going to come from this new management plan. It's worth reading about. It's worth being aware of mountain lions and mountain lion issues, especially if you're thinking about buying in the mountains. One of the things we warn our clients about, if they have pets or small humans or plan either of them, that mountain lions are a real deal here and becoming increasingly a problem. And you should just be aware of it, if nothing else.
Yeah. It's I can draw parallels. You know, growing up next to the beach, sharks are always like kind of ever-present. And to some extent, you know, we're in their environment and they're in ours. There's always going to be that overlap. So it's just educating yourself on, you know, the chances of seeing them, what to do if you interact, and kind of how to stay away from, keep personal space between each other as well. Unfortunately, also, you know, your pets make a great snack. So there's a lot of awareness around that too, you know.
Right. And if you see one, don't run. Yeah. Don't act like prey. because you trigger their prey instinct. You know, get those arms out there and look big and throw rocks, but do not run away from mountain lions.
Get scary. Yeah.
Get scary. Yeah. If you have to move away slowly, keeping your eyes on the mountain lion. Do not run from the mountain lion.
Yeah. I remember we went for a night hike, some friends of mine, and this was back in high school, and we went up Chautauqua Trail, that little trailhead, and we got maybe 500 feet in the tree line and started shining our flashlights at the trees, and just two eyes shining right back at us, and we very quickly just slowly backed down the hill and went home. So they're out there.
I had the same experience on Sanitas. It turned out to be deer.
Oh yeah!
But holy cow, when I first saw the eye shine, you know, the reflection,
it still could have been deer on mine too. Yeah,
it freaked me out. And then I realized it was deer, and I calmed down because the deer aren't going to be hanging out where there's a mountain lion, mm-hmm, in theory. But
still, I just eyes in the darkness are scary no matter what they are, and I will be steering clear.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, next topic.
Yes.
Let's talk about some House bills. House Bill 1152. This is still in progress. This is at the state level. The article is from Boulder Reporting Lab, another one of these independent news sources, or newer news sources that are not the Denver Post or the Daily Camera. And the article is titled, City of Boulder Backs Statewide Bill That Would Make It Easier to Build ADUs. And, you know, I don't know if everybody in the city of Boulder, by the way, would back this. I love it how it's just subscribed to the whole city is backing this. But clearly, some of our elected officials are, some of whom I consider friends. But just like with all of my friends, I don't agree with everything they do. And let me make it clear about that. But this particular bill is designed to override local rule on accessory dwelling units or ADUs, allowing much more of them in backyards, basements, or garages. These are smaller living units where you might have a tenant or a family member that's aging. I mean, they make sense for so many reasons, and I'm all in favor of it if that's what the voters want.
Right. It comes down to democracy.
I'm a believer in democracy. I'm not 100% sure that people that live in Boulder and own in Boulder want, you know, ADUs everywhere, but it looks like officially Boulder is backing it, and it, as of this podcast, I don't think it's been signed into law yet, but it looks very likely to be signed into law given that we have a democratically controlled government and a democratic governor here in Colorado.
It would override rules mandating off-street parking or requiring the owner of the property to live on site for certain high-density modifications to the property. That's a tough one. Boulder has pretty rough parking as it is. I do kind of like how Pearl Street, their current solution for that, but I don't necessarily know you could implement that on the whole city. Though, at the same time, a lot of these homes, if they were to throw in an ADU, Boulder is super bikeable. So that's my biggest concern, at least, is just added traffic and added lack of parking inaccessibility. You know?
And valid, and that's what a lot of the neighbors would say, is if you just create duplexes everywhere or ADUs everywhere, you're going to have a parking problem, and it's wishful thinking that all these people moving into town don't need parking spaces, although there are lots of people that live car-free in Boulder.
It just sucks in the winter.
It sucks in the winter. It sucks when you've got to haul a whole bunch of groceries, and it sucks when your bike gets stolen by some person that disassembles it for, you know, in a chop shop. All of that is part of the sucky parts of bicycles. I love cycling, by the way. Everyone who knows me knows I have a lot of bicycles. I love bicycling. But the reality is most people will hop in their car before they hop in their bike.
Right.
But at the same time, what I guess I want to draw attention to is that for many, many decades, Boulder has had very restrictive zoning to prevent single-family neighborhoods from turning into cities, high-density cities.
Mm-hmm.
And the number of rules, Hamish, if you ever try to develop something in Boulder, the difficulty in doing so becomes very obvious quickly. Like, you need to have, if you want to put a garage behind your house because you want more parking, mm-hmm. or you want a little carriage house set up back there, you need to have enough space between your edge of your house and the lot line to allow a full-size driveway to go in. You can't do a little narrow driveway. I think it has to be like 9 feet, and don't quote me on this, but a lot of Martin Acres houses, for example, are too close to the lot line by like 3 inches or 4 inches. Mm. And they don't give you an exception. And I have seen people literally take down the side of their house, pull it in a foot, and build it back up so they could have that space to put in a driveway that then goes to a garage in the back. And that's one of the reasons within these neighborhoods that homes that already have that two-car garage or one-car garage in the back of the house have a higher value than those that don't. And that higher value is in excess of the cost to build that garage because it's so hard to find a lot that will even let you do it mm-hmm. because of the width, the distance from the edge of the house to where the lot line is on the narrow side. Or on the wide side, it doesn't matter, wherever you want to try to put that driveway. So many rules that restrict you from doing those things. You're also not allowed to park, so you need 2 parking spaces per house. But those 2 parking spaces cannot be nose to back. They have to be side to side.
Oh. Okay.
That's right. And guess what your garage is? Your garage is one of those 2 spaces. So your garage counts, but then you can't have...
You can't have a single car matter in, how a long you, in a driveway.
You can't... If you take out the garage and turn it into living space, you also need a driveway that's wide enough for 2 cars side by side. And it costs a lot of money because you have to put in a curb cut if you want to then build a driveway. Like the rules and rules and rules that just layer on and layer on to prevent development in Boulder, for whatever reasons they were created, okay, those have been very difficult for people to use their properties flexibly. Mm-hmm. And again, my position is democracy. If that's what the people want, I'm in favor. But I just don't want people to be hoodwinked. And the way that often politicians work is that they, you know, they rename their bill in some sort of deceptive language that's actually the opposite of what it's going to do, right? Yeah. Like, there's all sorts of nastiness that politicians do because they just assume the voter is ignorant. And I really want the voter to be really well educated and then vote on reality, not vote on wishful thinking. But
I think,
hey, I'm not in public office.
I was going to say, I think that's about as far as we can go without getting too political. But we towed that line nicely.
We could go a lot further, but it would get very political. And also, I want to make it clear, I'm not pro or con on this. I would love to see more people be able to afford and live in Boulder, but I also feel like there's so many people living in Boulder and the traffic is getting worse and worse. And I think the people that live here have a right to vote for what they want without being hoodwinked by crafty politicians.
Crafty verbiage.
With that said.
And I guess my final thought on this is I at least appreciate that Boulder isn't a high rise city. That, you know, we have a few larger buildings, but for the most part, it's not. It's relatively sprawling, and I really appreciate that.
And I've been saying this for decades, is that if you really want a high-density city, it's called Denver, and it's 30 miles south. Like, why are you moving here demanding to turn Boulder into Denver? I know that's going to get me in hot water with certain groups.
Comment
that
below.
Attitude. And I often would ask people, okay, all right, you want X many more housing units in Boulder. At what point is Boulder full then? Like, what's your number? And they refuse to answer that question because the answer is it's never full. No. We always have inclusive space for anybody who wants to live here. And it's like, okay, I don't know. I grew up in New York. I commuted from Brooklyn to Manhattan. I worked
You've
in New York.
Seen full.
Grew up in the city. I've seen full, yeah. And it didn't get cheaper in Manhattan or Brooklyn by just densifying these places. And again, I'm from upstate, not from the city, but I did live there for a number of years. I feel that's important to mention because of how different New York City is from the rolling hills and fields of where I grew up.
Yeah.
Radically different.
No, good point.
All right, Hamish, let's move on from this topic, and let's let you talk about the next one because you put it on here.
I did put it on here, and I am sort of regretting it. We are talking about today, let me just get the time code down. 50. Today we are talking about bentonite, which is an expansive clay in Colorado. And I was doing a little search. I talked to a friend of mine who manages some properties in Colorado, and he was talking about some facilities that were built on bentonite. And they're beginning to sink, settle, crack, and it gets into foundation, and it goes far more complex than I think I can possibly address in this podcast, even if we were doing a regularly scheduled podcast. Though I do recall Colorado is essentially famous for being built on expensive soils. And what I'll link in the description is a very large PDF from the
723 pages, Hamish.
It's light reading.
What is this document?
It's a light read, and it is titled Denver, the City and County of Denver Hazard Mitigation Plan. And it essentially goes over, like, I mean, a bunch of other things, but I was specifically looking into the expansive soils of Colorado. I'm curious in the areas where that is, and I'm also curious how far it goes, you know, to what extent. I know how it's common for houses to settle, and the typical train of thought is like a house is done settling after X amount of years or however that works, but it depends on the soil and it depends on so many other factors. And I haven't touched on this 700 page PDF too heavily, so I'm not by any means well read on it, though it is something that I think if you are considering moving into the area, it's almost, I don't want to normalize it, but the ground shifts here, and as moisture fluctuates, as we get snow, as we get rain, I mean, last spring was super wet, things move, and you're going to see it whether or not you want to in certain places.
Well, okay, so there's a little more nuance to it.
Okay, great.
And it is a very valid due diligence area. You could try asking ChatGPT to summarize that 723 pages into one paragraph, but I'll do my best as a human to also add on to what Hamish shared, that yes, bentonite-containing soils are expansive soils, and it depends on moisture levels, but it will cause movement. And if your foundation is under-engineered, you are very likely to see foundation damage and other problems. And here in Boulder County, if you're driving to the Flatirons Mall where the Walmart is, that road from the highway to the Walmart is really wavy, and they, from the day they built it, it's been moving. And you could, and Superior, where that development is located, is known for this. So when they first built Rock Creek, there were all these lawsuits that were filed over foundations that were failing, and many of those owners had to incur very expensive repairs and mitigation methods to keep those foundations stable enough. I haven't seen a home fall in any of those neighborhoods, but whenever we have a buyer that's looking in Rock Creek, I tell them that, look, you at least need to know that this issue exists. And at this point, all of this neighborhood should have been mitigated, but when it's hidden behind drywall, you can't see the foundation. Mm-hmm. So there are other ways of measuring movement. And you hope the seller has properly disclosed if they've hidden all the cracked basement walls with new drywall and, you know, new skim coat. That would be really disingenuous and shady. I've had listings, Hamish, where the house was like a fun house. Mm-hmm. And my client came to me and said, I got to sell this rental. And I went and looked at it. I was like, you cannot sell it like this. You have got to pay to get this foundation mitigated.
Especially,
and we have to then We then have to disclose that the foundation had issues and we mitigated it, and here's what we did. We're not guaranteeing the foundation forever, but it no longer looks like a carnival funhouse. Mm-hmm. And the home, of course, sold without a problem, and I hope the buyer is fine. We disclosed what we knew, but that's the right way to deal with it if you have that funhouse basement. But not everyone does that. There are shady people out there. But you should know about this, and there are ways to decrease the probability of further movement in your foundation using helical piers and other things. There are other ways to do it. And the helical piers is sort of stage one. There's another stage two, and I can't remember the term. I didn't research this podcast. This was your item. But there's like a giant cornerstone piece that is then dropped into each corner of the foundation. It's another method. It's a more aggressive method than helical piers. I can't remember what it's called.
I'm thinking like bracing, jacking, like...
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, all sorts of work to make sure your foundation is in good shape. And expansive soil, which varies, the degree of expansive soil varies all over the place. All over. Yeah, so...
One thing, because I was searching for houses last year, and I kept coming across every now and then there's a listing, and it's like, home has foundation issues. And if you watch it, a lot of them sit, especially if they're kind of not really touched, unless it's a really good deal, But if you watch, especially like the additional documents, you can see like, okay, initial, there's an inspection, a foundation issue is identified. Then the house goes under contract again, and then it's backed out. But now it's got an engineering report. And then it goes under contract again, and then that buyer backed out. And now you've got a quote to install it. And it's like, you know, if you're lucky, you could wait long enough and have it all teed up. But yeah.
Yeah. The right answer is to fix it before you list, mm-hmm. not do this whole song and dance and hope buyers are too dumb to know that foundation repairs are expensive.
Not to mention you're the part required that I to disclose.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I know.
Doesn't mean they do it.
Still going to hit on that.
And you know what's really interesting, Hamish, is 2 or 3 years ago I did a sale in Denver. I think this is right maybe the summer before you joined the company, 3 years ago. Mm. And Lauren, if you're listening, I'm talking about your house. And this is in the city of Denver. It's a historic home, I think like 120, at least 120 years old. It was pre-1900. And we went into the basement, and the basement foundation was brick. Squared bricks, not the fieldstone you sometimes see here in Boulder. Wow. And it looked like original mortar with no movement.
Huh.
It was, despite not being a super heavy duty
like rebar enforced concrete
foundation, yeah. It looked great. It looked like it originally had been a dirt floor. There was no movement, and this was something we talked about. Was wow, this foundation is like
impressive.
You know, it's like a Model T compared to a Tesla, and yet it's rock solid. It shows no movement. It doesn't mean that this won't happen tomorrow if there's some change in the water table or your neighbor starts, you know, running jackhammers in the basement. Maybe it'll cause movement. Irrigation could be wrong. Mm-hmm. But right now, this foundation looks amazing. And I attended several meetings with inspectors and contractors because they were looking at getting work done before they moved in. And all of them were of the opinion that this is a rock-solid foundation because of its age and the lack of movement.
Yeah. And brick shows, too, doesn't it? You get, like, the stair step, and then you get the gaps in the mortar and all
easily.
Sorts. Yeah.
I think almost easier than anything else, you'll see movement in a brick wall. But
yeah,
that's a personal opinion, by the way. I got to caveat that because I don't know if that's entirely true. But that's just based on, it's very easy to see it when there is movement in a brick wall. But I don't know if brick wall is stronger than rebar or concrete. We need an engineer to answer these questions. I don't really know the answer.
But yeah, I just wanted to raise that if you're out of state listening and thinking about moving in. It is a thing, and I don't think it's a thing exclusive to Colorado, but we do have it here, and it does happen.
Yeah. All right, next topic.
Yep, hit it.
Ready?
Go for it.
Florida real estate. Right now, there's a number of articles running around on Twitter, on X, and other places talking about the massive increase in distressed listings, the number of listings hitting the market in places like Tampa. And is it a canary in the coal mine for real estate in general? I'm not going to give you a specific link to an article, but you can find these articles on X. The one that caught my eye was a chart showing it was a map just showing a sea of listings hitting the market with the word motivated seller, I think is what they were looking for. And I know people have been sitting on the sidelines hoping that Boulder real estate sees a major correction. But it ain't. We're not Florida, people. Like Florida is this its own zoo of overbuilding, oversupply, and then ups and downs. It's had bubbles in for the last 100+ years. There have been giant bubbles of real estate that collapse in places in Florida. That Colorado does not behave that way in general, although there are certain pockets. And we were more ups and downs prior to the year 2000, when we were much more closely tied to oil and gas as a state. Mm-hmm. Now our economy here is much more diversified, and it's closely tied to employment. And because of the difficulty building here, unlike Florida, and the limited labor supply, we don't see that sort of ups and downs to that degree.
Mm-hmm.
We do see volatility, like the post-bubble 2006 to 2009 period. Prices dropped significantly. Prices have also dropped significantly since March 2022. We've seen a serious decrease from that time period, but nothing like what's happening in Florida right now, apparently. Not our market, but I think it's one to pay attention to and see if that contagion spreads to other markets. And the Florida market, by the way, is driven by something that's also a factor here, and that is the rapid increase in insurance costs. Mm. or complete lack of insurability of some mountain homes because of wildfire risk. For Florida, it's probably closer related to climate change risk, but it's happening far faster than I think even our most skeptical clients have suggested that you're going to start seeing climate change be a driver for real estate.
Yeah, I've been watching a few YouTube videos. That's where everybody gets their best education, so I'm not going to bring up any opinions off of that, but it's scary, definitely. That's where I... Yeah.
Well, it's scary. There's a risk. Mm-hmm. Life is full of risks, and I think the right thing to do is understand the risk, the upside and the downside risks of various scenarios, and plan accordingly. Here in Boulder, the vast majority of higher-end buyers are not impacted by mortgage rates at all. They're moving capital from the stock market into real estate. They're selling one house somewhere and buying another house here, and it's all cash. Mm-hmm. The mid end of the market, the entry level of the market, is more sensitive to rates, but the upper end is not. So the rate environment that is finally causing the dam to burst, apparently, in Florida, and the insurability issue, is not the same stuff that's happening here in Boulder, at least not to the same extent.
Yeah.
Denver condos, though, are a buyer's market. We just declared. So maybe the contagion did spread to Denver condos.
Yeah, interesting. Yep, there's a lot of different variables. There are some similarities. Watch it, yeah.
One to watch, and the best indications of how the market's doing are supply and demand. How quickly are things selling? How much selection do you have? And how does that inventory compare today to like what the inventory was in 06 and 07? Bubble markets are two indicators for bubble markets are high volume of transactions and high supply side. Those two things are red flashing lights in your dashboard of a potential bubble. Neither of those things are very evident here in Boulder. People aren't flipping contracts, not to any great extent anyway. It's super rare. And there isn't tons of inventory, even though inventory is up. Mm-hmm. So we'll see.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Shall we talk about our last
honorable mention
news item? Yeah, the honorable mention. We're not going to go too far into this because we are happy to help clients of any political persuasion, of any religious persuasion, any gender identity, any race. These are not how we choose our clients. We are more than happy to help you, and our goal is to help you make a smart decision. And we are inclusive, radically inclusive as a company. Mm-hmm. I want to make that clear. Yep. But sometimes you can't help but comment about some news. And this week was Super Tuesday. And as everyone expected, well, we have two major presidential candidates.
Big surprise.
And there's no surprises.
Yeah.
So no surprises. But the anger is growing on both sides.
Should we reenact what I did before we hopped on this podcast? Where I was like, I've got my ballot right here. Oh, shoot.
Oh, yeah. Hamish is like, I got to get my vote in. I'm like, it's too late.
One day.
Like, are you sure in Westminster here? And yeah, no, you missed your vote. Sorry, Hamish.
Bad citizen. But the outcome was... the outcome, and I am the least bit surprised, but still is disheartened.
It's Lucy, teeing up the football. It's the Who song, Won't Get Fooled Again, which I posted on my Twitter, just because there's part of me that feels so saddened by the state of our democracy, the quality of the candidates we have, and how disappointing it is on both sides. And as a registered independent, I can point out the hypocrisy of both sides, and I don't feel like I'm hurting my team because I don't have a team other than I'm Team America. I'm Team Boulder. Yeah. I'm not Team Democrat or Republican. And I don't identify as liberal or conservative either. I think those are, frankly, BS labels that are used to divide people into pockets.
Yeah, exactly.
Those don't always apply. Like, I'm probably the incredibly socially liberal. I don't care who you're married to, how many people you're married to, what religion you are, but I really care about how my tax money is being spent, and it drives me crazy.
God, I mean, we all should. But yeah.
Yeah.
That's, I think that's an honorable mention. I'll take some criticism in the comments for being a bad citizen.
I'm sure. Fine. We'll get, you might.
Yeah.
I'll add one more thing. I, it's not that I don't care. I just hope that people are happy with their partnership choices, with their spirituality choices, with all the things that, you know, they have the a fulfilling life with the families they create. I don't need to, you know, take a side other than that. I'm for everyone being happy and fulfilled.
It's 2024, baby.
It's 2024. Right. You want to be conservative? Good for you. Just don't tell me what to do.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell me something I don't know. Let's move on before speaking we get into telling. Hot water.
Yeah.
All right. So this is our segment where we talk about something in real estate that you probably don't know about the business, unless you happen to have worked in the business for a while, or in this case, having taken the 2024 Colorado Real Estate Commission update, which is a required course for real estate agents. Every year, you have to take this update. And I knew this topic had existed prior to the update, but I was really interested in how the commission took it up. Mm-hmm. And basically, here's the deal. Realtors, real estate agents are required to disclose preemptively any material defects known to them about the property.
Material is the key word.
Right? That's, yeah, actual defects they know about. Now, interestingly, there have been court cases recently, and I don't have these in front of me, that say that if the problem was addressed, it doesn't have to be disclosed. Hmm. Now, in here in Colorado, meaning if they'd fixed it, if there was a mold issue, it's been fixed, you have to disclose it. There are some court cases out there that say you don't. But here in Colorado, in our seller's property disclosure, there are certain fields that say, has this problem ever existed? And when the seller refuses to provide this document to you, you should be really careful as a buyer, because often they know things that they don't want you to know. And it doesn't matter that it was a rental property. Rental properties, they should know more and have records
because
they're property managers.
Yeah, all sorts.
They have a ledger.
So what is this immaterial defect? Immaterial feature?
So psychological defects are not required to disclose. And even further, listing agents are discouraged from disclosing these because they could affect the marketability of their sellers' properties. And that's the part I was really shocked by in the commission update, that not only did they make it clear that psychological stigma does not have to be disclosed because it's not material to the property itself, even though it clearly affects value, but listing agents should not disclose this to the buy side. And then they use this bizarre example. Do you remember example, Hamish, of the dead hamster?
Oh, that was what it was.
So a hamster dies, and the seller shoves the remains into a crack in the foundation and then puts a poster over it, which is the craziest example I've ever heard. Like, is it the ashen remains, like the hamster was cremated, or are we talking about a rotting hamster shoved into a crack? How big is this crack? Like, all of this, my brain just spiraled into 1,000 questions.
We got distracted when that, distracting example.
And now the property is haunted by the hamster? Is that what we're talking about? I think they chose this because it's less triggering to most people than a murder-suicide, which there have been here in Boulder, and the homes that have... I happen to know the actual one of the two people that was involved in the murder-suicide, the actual person who pulled the trigger. It's a long, long time ago. This is a home in the Baseline neighborhood. It's a tragic story, and there is zero knowledge in the listing material about what happened in this house, but the whole neighborhood knew what happened in the house. And there are lots of people that would feel very uncomfortable purchasing a home where somebody had been murdered
in some sort of traumatic event, and right?
People die all the time, but something like that, I could tell you my wife would say, hell no, we're not buying that house. I don't care how good of a deal
my roommates it is. They think there's a ghost here.
There might be. And so, you know, okay. Right. And maybe it's a friendly ghost, like Casper, but I'm not here to tell people their spiritual beliefs. And I have spiritual beliefs too. And I certainly have felt energy in houses that felt dark. And we used to offer shamanic blessings, Hamish, as a closing gift.
Fun.
For clients if they wanted it. To cleanse the home. I mean, how very Boulder. But maybe it's just cleansing my brain, but I will tell you, I felt a difference in homes before and after.
Yeah.
So, And there are realtors that will swear up and down that for a year the home wasn't selling, and then they hired a shaman, and he blessed the home, went through the whole process of smudging every room, and
sold next week.
It was under contract 2 weeks later. So, you know, it's one of these. I'm a math and science guy, and yet I allow this to exist in a part of my brain that says, okay, there's a lot more going on than I understand in the world, and if it works, it works.
Yeah.
But what this means for you as a buyer is that you should talk to the neighbors before your inspection period expires. And even though this might not qualify as an inspection item, you could potentially, and I'm not telling you, hold on, this is entertainment.
Yeah, nice.
I am not telling you to act in bad faith, okay?
Yeah.
But maybe you discover some other things about the house that physically are not acceptable to you after you happen to have discovered that there was a murder-suicide. I don't know. Check the right box and talk to your agent if you discover a psychological stigma you can't deal with. But you should do that due diligence before your inspection period expires. Frankly, you should do it before you write the offer, but let's be practical. If the neighbor tells you on day 5 of the contract period that, you know, everyone that...
Something
you know,
it's terrible happens.
Amityville house.
Yeah.
And they're, every time you walk in, there are voices that say, get out. And the previous owner committed not just one murder-suicide, but 5. And there's a reason this home is so cheap. And, oh boy, are you in trouble. You might decide that this isn't the right house for you based on some other factors.
Yeah.
Okay?
And
also, or you might just walk away from your earnest money and default. I'm not giving you legal advice. Do what you want.
And now you know, too, that these that agents in general from the commission are discouraged to even really talk about this or shed any light on it. So if it matters to you...
Your agent.
Yeah.
Your agent is not required to tell you about psychological stigma.
Mm-hmm. So that's your mission.
I will tell you that if you are my client on the buy side, I will tell you about psychological stigma of the house.
And, I mean,
if I'm on the listing side, I'm going to be uncomfortable and we'll be discussing negotiations by email because I'm a bad fit. You know, I don't want to be put in that position.
Yeah.
But because I feel like people have a right to know. But I also represent the seller and will do what the law says and represent their best interests. But it's there's an internal part that sucks. It's like representing a murderer that you know did the murder.
Oh, dude, good thing we're not in law.
Yeah, right. Yeah. How do those people sleep at night? But they do, because they believe in the law.
Yeah, believe in something.
All right.
Okay.
We've talked about dead people, and we've talked about murder-suicides, and we've talked about dead hamsters shoved into cracks in the wall. And I want to know who wrote that question and came up with that example in the forums committee for the real estate committee, the Colorado Real Estate Division. I want to know who did that, because that's quite the creative example.
Yeah. Well, we've covered a bunch of topics today. Brief touch on the market conditions. Talked about 817 Racket Lane. Highly encourage you to check that out. That's in the description. Went over sale of the week. Very pretty home in a prime location. And took a look at the news. If you have any questions for us or would like us to represent you in Boulder County, surrounding areas, Front Range, all the way up to certain luxury mountain areas, go ahead and reach out. Osmond's contact information is in the description below as well. And also check us out on all of the other socials. We're House Einstein wherever we could be.
I appreciate that, Hamish. And I'll add that you can subscribe to our newsletter. It comes out once a month. You can subscribe to this podcast. You can tell your friends, check out this podcast. You can share it. We really appreciate all the feedback we get. I got stopped the other day when I was doing a showing in Mapleton Hill by a podcast listener who heard my voice in stereo suddenly and realized I was standing outside the home he was walking by as he was listening to the podcast.
Uncanny.
That feels really good.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate those types of serendipitous moments. But yeah, like, subscribe, do all the things. And most importantly, thank you so much for taking your precious time to listen to us talk about real estate. And we'll catch you next time.
Take care.